The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower and Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here today with a return guest, a good friend of mine for a long time, Bob LeClade. Robert, introduce yourself, please.
Oh, thanks, Mark. Good to see you again. It's been a while since we've gotten together, but I enjoy these little chats about what's going on in the federal IT channels we do periodically. Yeah, you're right. I've been at this for a while. I started out, I don't even know if you know this, about 10 years in the Navy. The Navy actually brought me to Washington. I ended up, you know, running projects in IT and buying, procuring IT for the Navy. So I've seen the end user side. I went there to an OEM, a vendor called Tandem Computers, did fault tolerant servers, eventually got bought in by HP in that empire. So I saw the manufacturer side for a while. Spent a little time at a reseller. And over the last many years now, it's been in the distribution world. 10 years at Ingram, several years at Avnet, several years at Immix Group, which is now part of the Aero organization. So I've kind of seen federal IT from the end user, from the reseller, the VAR side, from the manufacturer's side, as well as the distribution. So it gives me kind of a complete resume on all the pains that each one of those steps in the process has.
And more importantly, you've seen the evolution of the channel over 30 years now. And the channel is still lifeblood for hardware and software going into this market because, as Oracle can tell you, you've got to be very careful about owning certain contracts yourself. You want that distribution in place.
Right. Well, and I would tell you, my early days, distribution didn't exist. I mean, I learned about distribution during my days at Tandem and HP. Because when I came into the market from the Navy, I was a direct sales rep selling directly back to the Navy. I didn't understand this VAR model, what distributors did. So I kind of learned that along the way. And then I think distributors picked up more power through there because they figured out they had a value and built that value.
Yeah. And Ingram used to be a bookseller or a book channel.
They had multiple divisions. They did books, they did DVDs, they did entertainment, they bought a couple of smaller distributors and put them together as Ingram Micro. So, that Ingram family, which is still a great model on people that understood distribution, no matter what they were distributing, worked well.
Okay.
And has a value.
Yeah. So, and just so everybody out there knows, I'm back at GW teaching graduate school this year, and a large part of it's going to be channel. So I brought in my ace on this. So I want to define the roles. So this is for my students especially. Take notes. There's a quiz. Let's define the players and their roles in the ecosystem, starting with the OEMs.
Great question, Mark, because this is where I think a lot of people confuse terms. So you and I talk about OEMs, vendors, manufacturers, people that build the product, right? They're designing, building it, or they're responsible for it. Typically, the product solution goes from there to distribution. That is in charge of kind of getting it to the street, getting it to the resellers or getting it to the end users that buy that. So distribution, there's a couple of forms of distribution, which we'll talk about a little bit too, I'm sure, that comes next. Then you get down to the solution providers. I don't tend to use the word VARs in this town. The government doesn't like the term resellers. So I tend to say solution providers, but that is the people that are actually interfacing to the government and then the government themselves. So kind of a four-step process from the manufacturer to distribution to the VAR to the end user.
Right. So your role when you went to Ingram, which was late 90s, early 2000s?
Late 90s.
Yeah. You were one of the first, if not the first, senior distributor people in the DC market tasked with helping grow the government business.
Correct. Ingram had started with a government group, but came out of Orange County where their headquarters were. They had a vice president here. I was kind of the second or third vice president. Kurt was on the west and became, Jay Lamke, who's now at Government Acquisitions, was here just ahead of me. Jay hired me into Ingram, actually. And then we kind of took that seed that had been planted and started to sprout and built a complete model for public sector, not just federal, but SLED and education as well. because there was still value you could put on things of teaching people how to sell into those sectors and how to get the contracts for those sectors, how to hold events for the end users to get, you know, the end users and the manufacturers together. So we built a great model over those next 10 years that I was there doing just that.
Yeah. And I really didn't see much activity during that time frame from the other major distributors, Tech Data or Avnet or Synnex. Or Arrow, you know, everybody paid lip service to the market. They have a lot of money. We better get some. But I didn't see any programs in place like the one that Ingram started.
I would concur. I think Ingram not only put the people in place, they invested behind it. Where the other distributors in those days had one or two people worried about federal, but I think they were always envious of what we had at Ingram, how we built that program, how successful we were, how we could get our message out to the marketplace quite well. So they have over time emulated that model, which is good and bad depending on whether you're competing with them or not, right?
Right, right. But, you know, educating the, and I'll still call it the reseller community, educating the reseller community on the nuances here, why certain contracts are better than other contracts,
yes,
and what kind of contractual mix you need to sell into a particular agency, and more importantly, once you get on one, how to bid.
How to stay out of trouble once you're on one also.
Well, yeah, that's a biggie, and there's all kinds of trouble you can get into. So we have the distribution model in place, and in the mid-90s, we have a variation on the theme, the launch of DLT and Immix Group as a value-added distributor in the federal space. Explain how that started.
Well, I think what the founders of those two organizations discovered was even the broadline distributors, as well as we were doing it at Ingram and how Tech Data and Synnex and others were trying to emulate it, nobody was specialized in the market. And there were things, certainly my Ingram days, they wouldn't let me do. In those days, they wouldn't let me hold a contract. They wouldn't let me hold a GSA. And those founders recognized if they held contracts, were located here in the Beltway area, had their sales teams here, could get together with the vendors with their sales teams here, they could grow rapidly. And even the size I was at Ingram, I'd envy what an Immix or a DLT could come across with. And then you watch what, you know, the spinoff became Carahsoft, which is now huge in the market. That specialization works in this federal market. It's a different market. It speaks a different language. It's got different rules and regulations.
It's the minister of silly walks.
Yes.
You know, a couple of people in this market do that silly walk better than anybody. I'm thinking of Abad and Art.
That's right.
You know, about a pair of aces.
We often talk about, you know, the federal market. It's just another market of like many others, but it has its own language. It has its own currency. It has its own rules, lots of rules. You know, you just don't come in and take somebody to golf and close business on the 18th or 19th hole, which you can do a little bit more in the commercial marketplace.
Right.
Here you end up in jail for those kind of things today.
Right.
So I think if you got people that know those rules, regulations, how to work them, how to get around them, what you can do legally and illegally and guide a vendor or an OEM through that process, those distributors had a great market. And that's where I think that evolution of those, you know, you want to call them value-added distributors came from.
Yeah. So we're going to take our first break. I'm here with Bob LeClade. You can find Bob at find him on LinkedIn. Just look up Bob LeClade, LACLEDE, and you'll find him because there's only one on LinkedIn.
There's only one of me.
There you go. And I can say the same thing, only one of me too. So look us both up. But if you need education, if you need help in the channel, Bob is a consultant in this arena, and from my perspective, there's virtually nobody out there that's seen it from as many places as up close as LeClade. So look him up. We'll be back right after these messages. Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Bob LeClade, the channel guru, the government channel guru, not just federal, state and local too. Bob's been doing this for a while, quite successfully, from the distributor point of view, from the value-added distributor point of view, from the OEM point of view, and from the reseller point of view. So again, very few people know this like Mr. LeClaid. So Bob, let's talk about the, you know, I've asked Jeff Copeland, founder of Immix, to be on the show. I asked Abod, founder of Craig Abod, founder of Carisoft, to be on the show. They don't want to be on the show. So we're going to talk about this stuff for them.
So you're stuck with me.
Nah, man, that works for me. All right. you know, they would take the fifth. And, you know. So the roles of the value-added distributor in this market, you said in the last segment that this is a highly specialized market, and to be successful, particularly from an OEM point of view, you really want to pick a distributor that can get your stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
Take it away.
I agree. One thing we should probably start with, Mark, is what those VADs, what the DLTs and Immix Group and now Carisoft did originally, and contrast it to the major broadline distributors in terms of product. They did not start with hardware. They didn't start with complex hardware that needed integration. Because, you know, at Ingram, Tech Data, Synnex, we all had integration facilities where we could stuff memory into things or configure, you know, big massive storage arrays differently.
5 or 50 or 500 computers.
Right. So they came from the software side, where what you're actually shipping is a software key in most cases, right? A lot simpler. We don't need warehouses, didn't need integration. So they were very selective on the OEMs, the vendors they started with, which gave them tremendous ramp. And then they became exclusive. They would go to an OEM and say, we are only going to carry you in this market, and we're not going to carry your competitors. And that let them get very deep with those OEMs on getting that message to the street. Where at Ingram, I could have 5 security lines that were all competing against each other. Those players all went to the one that they started with, at least, as it came up through the ranks. So I think their vision.
You went to the dance with.
You went to the one that brought you to the dance. And in most cases, those exclusives they had with those OEMs are still at those places. They've not moved around. So they're getting good service. You know, those OEMs are getting good service from their distributors. So I think they started from that piece of it, where the broadliners, the Ingrams, the Synnex, the Tech Datas, and I put Avnet and Arrow in this same mix of it before, you know, Arrow right. And Immix Group came together, et cetera, and Avnet and Tech Data now, where they had, you know, those broadliners compete on hardware every day on every transaction. Where in the software world, you didn't do that. You'd see, you know, 2 security lines competing against each other, but they would be coming from 2 different distributors. So from a distributor side, those distributor sales teams and marketing teams could get very, very deep with those vendors. So I think that was part of the first, you know, secret sauce that any of those owners and what we've told you, those owners and founders would tell you that worked for them. And they spent a lot of time courting those vendors up front. So that was key. Where the major distributors that were doing hardware didn't do that. They were all selling the same laptops, desktops, storage systems, right. You know, et cetera. So good for them to recognize that.
Yeah, maybe color was different, but.
right. So how do you tell the difference between a commodity, right? And we all have our favorites with, you know, laptops, et cetera. So that's kind of where it started. But then as it's come up, what they did, they were able to grow that so fast and be so successful. And the model of what they did as in terms of holding contracts, holding GSA contracts, finding other contracts, other IDIQs, I'm sure you want to talk about at some point this morning. You kind of went through there and built that so successfully. And everybody took notice. And I think they pioneered, you know, things, and I came from the broadline side. They pioneered concepts that, you know, we all envied and wanted to get to. So, you know, good for them on recognizing that. And they were also doing one other thing that the distributors weren't doing. They would sell some product directly to the government, act as a reseller, and sometimes they would act as a distributor. Now, that's kind of like, you know, you got to be careful with that model because it's dangerous. But there are still vendors and OEMs in this town that don't use distribution. They will use a Carisoft or an Immix Group or DLT to sell directly to the government as their master VAR, master reseller. And other products, they run 2-tier distribution. So you kind of look at each product on where it fits, and they were kind of a chameleon, jack of all trades. They could play either way.
Right. And obviously successfully.
Very.
But, you know, every now and again, I'll get a call, maybe a little less frequently now than before, and somebody will call and go, Oh, I didn't get on Soup. When are they going to recompete it? I can't use that, or I'm not on CIOCS or Alliant or whatever. And again, you know, Carahsoft, MX, DLT have an array of contractual vehicles available, and resellers tap into them for what?
Well, I'm a great advocate personally of distributors holding those contracts for a couple of reasons. Number one, if you're a mid-size VAR, mid-size solution provider, do you really want to spend, or can you afford to spend $100,000, $150,000 chasing one of those contracts? You know, those are hundreds of pages of proposals and compliance and all the other stuff. When Soup 5 came out a couple of years ago, and I was kind of surveying that at the end, I said, I'd go to the CEOs and go at the VARs and go, how much did you spend capturing that contract? And the answer would be $100,000, $150,000. There aren't too many people out there that have got that kind of money. But distributors, even though they're running on thin margins, $150,000 where they can drop and use that across their 400 VARs that are selling in the federal space isn't too hard.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, I kind of like that. That was another value add I thought distribution could
play. Now, are OEMs going to kick in a little MDF to go after the right vehicle, too?
They will help you with that periodically. You can get them
the right
mix and where they want to go and the right agencies they want to get into.
Soup, they want to bowl.
You've got it. You want to go bowling on Soup. Yes, you do.
And you know, I don't mean to leave off the GSA schedules here because that's really Ingram's first, maybe only vehicle.
And they of course bought ProMark a number of years ago. There may be some others in there, but
ProMark doesn't have any of the GWACs. I looked.
I don't think they have any. I think you're still right on that. They don't. But you know, and I often look at GSA, as a broad contract, where as an OEM, I will tell my OEM clients, you need to be on a GSA somewhere because that sets your street price, right? Everybody needs to be on GSA by somebody. Don't do your own,
right,
Mr. Vendor. That's a different problem because we know the history of fines for that. But let distribution run it because they're good at it. They're doing it for 70, 80, 100 other OEMs. They do it successfully. But then when you get to the sales side of the game, we'll also tell the OEMs, don't do all your sales via GSA. Do them on a Soup or an ITES or one of the other contractual vehicles. And they go, why is that? I thought I could do everything on GSA. I said, well, number one, depending on what agency you're selling into, they will tend to use their own contracts first before they use GSA. And the bigger issue, and I learned this from one of my legal counsels, we were talking to a vendor one day, because he was kind of delivering that same message. You got to have a GSA, but we want to get you on the other contracts. And the vendor went, why? He said, because if we screw up something on GSA, and I'll tell you, anybody does a lot of GSA business, you've got a liability in there for something. Not that you're trying to be illegal, but something won't get reported. There'll be some transaction that's kind of outside the norm.
You sign this left-handed.
Right. But if you get a fine on GSA, what you're going to get fined on is the amount of GSA business you did. So what you try to do is get on a GSA, minimize your sales on GSA, do most of your sales via one of the other IDIQs, because that limits your liability.
Yeah. Max Peterson, when he was vice president of federal at CDW, was in charge, obviously, of all sales to the feds. It's right after he left there, we did a long recorded interview. It's about 4 hours. But one thing has always stuck with me there. He said, you know, if his salespeople came in and complained that, oh, they didn't, you know, they wouldn't buy off schedule, Max would go, oh, too bad, go back. He said, we have the trifecta. The trifecta back in 04 was Soup, GSA, and ECS, which is now the CIOCS. And he said, every federal agency can access one of these vehicles. Get back there and sell.
Right. And I'd add first source to that in the later years with DHS selling into Homeland. You need that. So I often, when I'm talking to a partner or a vendor, I go, what agencies do you want to sell into? Because right then it tells me what contractual vehicles you need access to. Not that you need to hold, but you need a partner that has those contractual vehicles for that specific agency.
Yeah. And, you know, Soup, GWAC, CIOCS, GWAC, Alliant, GWAC, right? So, but are there specific agencies that prefer one of the GWACs over the other? Of course.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if you're targeting, you know, Army, if you're not on ITES.
ITES 3H, you're doing hardware.
You may be, you know, a little behind in sales.
Right. Again, not that they can't get to GSA or one of the or a soup contract. They just don't want to. It's harder. There's more paperwork to get there. So they'd rather go to ITES and Army than they would a GSA or a soup.
Right. Well, and they may do transactional business on GSA or soup and the larger buys on ITES.
Exactly.
So...
But Max is right. His statement is having that trifecta, having the number of contracts or the specific contracts that target the agencies you're trying to sell into or where you think your product fits if you're an OEM, ideal.
Yeah. So, but you know, one of the points here, folks, is that if you're not on one, it doesn't mean you can't partner with somebody that does have one. And it's one of the messages when I'll be hosting another GWAC panel at 9:30 Gov again this year. I think this is my third year doing this. One of the things that the program managers drive home is if you're not there, talk to our vendors. They love partners as long as you bring value to the table.
Right. You're right, Mark, and we spend a lot of time, or I spend a lot of time in my current business of, you know, directing partners to other partners that have certain contracts. I just got done with a client who does a lot of business, the intelligence side, the IC world, which is wonderful. They've got great skills in what they do there, but they're moving towards civilian agencies and DOD. And their question is, because I'm not going to get a soup for another 10 years, who do I team with that has soup when one of those opportunities comes up? Or who do I team with that's got an ITES? And my value is kind of play marriage broker, right? Is team them with somebody that has those contracts. You still let those two partners fight out the margin. Of course, your margin goes down a little bit, but it gets you in the agency, which is where you want to be.
In the door, darn right.
In the door.
And you know, I've seen companies pursue a prime spot literally over a decade. They'll partner during the process, but they're getting in the door. They're becoming more familiar with the vehicle. So the next time the open season comes around, you know, Soup 6, CIO, CS2, whatever it might be, they know enough to be able to put together a winning bid.
Well, and then they're in the hallways of those agencies. They can figure out, are there opportunities for them? If the agency falls out of favor in the budget, they don't have as much money. You know, you can back away from that, but you aren't, you know, kind of downsizing your contracting staff to go off to a new contract in some other agency. You've kind of got ways into everything.
Yep.
I often look at, you just want to be able to hand your sales force a list of, I can get you to all these contracts. Go find me an opportunity. I'll show you which contract we're going to use to take that deal down.
Okay. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'll be back with Bob right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest is Bob LeClade. Again, if you want to get in touch with Bob, look him up on LinkedIn. Bob, LACLEDE, Bob LeClade. Look him up on LinkedIn. If you need help in the channel, as a VAR, as an OEM, or anything in between, give him a call, because he knows this stuff, which is why he's here. So let's talk about why an OEM really needs to avoid holding its own schedule.
Well, you heard me on the previous segment say I don't encourage OEMs to hold their own schedules. And the reason is they get into trouble, not necessarily on their GSA business, but because some commercial sales rep taking down some big deal at the end of a quarter will do some unnatural discounting act that becomes their commercial sales practice. You must expose that and tell the government you're doing that. And then that tends to set your pricing, where if you don't hold the schedule, you can keep running your commercial business however you so desire. You still got to expose generally, this is how we do it on what we call the CSP, commercial sales practices charts. But if you know you've got your sales manager in Denver that sells something major to a commercial world and you're holding the schedule, that transaction is a liability to you. Where if you get that schedule, a GSA schedule, give it to a distributor that specializes in this market, they recognize they don't have that liability, and that's good for the vendor. It keeps them out of trouble in GSA.
And frankly, you know, most OEMs at any given time can't tell you the price of everything that was sold over the last X period.
Right.
Just doesn't happen.
No.
And if they miss something, a large brick is going to come from GSA Injustice in the form of a massive fine.
That's right. And you can Google a history of those, and they're all big numbers, seven-digit numbers.
Ridiculously business. So as long as we're talking about GSA, let's talk about two of my least favorite subjects, LPTA and TDR. So let's start with low price, technically acceptable.
Yes, one of those four-letter words, three- and four-letter words that we all love.
Yeah.
You know, least price, technically acceptable, lowest price, technically acceptable, whatever the acronym is, and even TDR. I agree with the concept there. You know, if you're going to buy a component, what they're trying to do is say, what's the best price we're paying for this component as the government? And they're trying to get transparency on that. So get, you know, share that with the procurement officers and contracting officers, share that across the agencies. It makes some sense. If you and I are going to go out and buy a car or a new refrigerator, we want to know kind of what's the price that people are paying for these things.
A lot of tools out there.
A lot of tools out there in this internet world to do that. So I like the intent of where they're going. What worries me is the direction this goes, in that how do you then differentiate your product from my product, right? We both got an automobile we want to sell to the government. They both have four wheels and an engine, or at least most of them do. Some are batteries and things now, but they both provide basic transportation. But maybe I want an automobile that has a softer ride. Maybe you want to be a little sportier. My wife was sitting here. She'd tell you anything with doesn't have 12 cup holders is not good. So what worries me is if you take these commodities, because it's approaching a commodity market, and say they're all the same, they really aren't. That's why there's all these different manufacturers of automobiles on the street. And what worries me is the government's losing its ability to say, Bob wants a softer riding automobile, Mark wants a sportier one, somebody else wants something that can go off-road and ride. I don't know how good the government is now being able to spec that. You and I grew up in a market where we would spec down to the processor speed, the storage speed, and things like that. In the automobile world, when you and I grew up, we knew exactly how much horsepower is in a car, how many cylinders. As I'm saying that, I don't think I know how much horsepower is on my sedan that's sitting in front of the building out there.
I have no clue.
No clue. So yeah,
this ain't the 60s.
Exactly. It's not. But I think that's what worries me with the direction that LPTA and TDR could be taking us, that it's just a car, right? It's just a server.
I've seen LPTA show up under other names over the last 30-plus years, and it's always not worked the way it was intended.
Well, if you're just trying to say this is generally the street price people are paying in the government for this, under what are the terms and conditions they bought under? It could be I sold it to you for a dollar, but your maintenance fees are ridiculous just because that's the structure of the deal that went down. So that data can be misleading based on what's in it. And I'm not into the weeds enough on those to see if they're going to hold that. So I worry about direction. I like the intent. It's like you and I, we can go Google the price of cars and find out anything we want to know out there on generally what people are paying for it. But when you and I get to the showroom based on what we're trying to do, our price may differ, right?
Yep, it does. But TDR especially, I mean, both of them irritated. TDR more so than LPTA in the way that it offloaded massive costs or tried to offload massive costs to the vendor community when, in effect, the government should already have most of that data.
Right. Yeah. It's the reporting, the administrative reporting thing. And we often talk about, certainly my state business, unfunded mandates from the feds that would come down.
Right.
LPTA kind of looks like that on the vendor community. You must report all this up and what you're selling at. It's like, why? I sold it to you. You should have that. So I don't want to get into the philosophical debate of who should be doing it, but it's that problem out there.
Yeah, but the transactional data reporting, I don't know if it was OMB or GAO, somebody came up with this saying that it's going to cost industry like, a gazillion dollars. And the more action you have on schedule, obviously, the more onerous it becomes.
Right.
So, and I know that Carisoft, I ran the numbers the other day doing some research for a client. Carisoft did almost $1 billion on schedule in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a lot of transactional data.
A lot of transactions up there to report.
Yeah. So, um, So not fun. Any other thoughts on LPTA or TDR?
No, I think the proof is in the pudding and the details, the devil's in the details of how it gets reported, how hard that is administratively for everybody to report, and whether everybody will administratively report. It's still pretty easy to hide those transactions, so, which is not what you want happening.
No, you don't, so, because, again, it's going to come back to haunt you sooner.
Going to come back to haunt you. So I worry about direction, not necessarily the intent. I like the intent.
Yeah. So, all right, we're going to take our last break. And when we come back, we will be talking about more recent developments in the market and potentially market consolidation. So you're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Bob and I will be back right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm sitting here with Bob LeClade. And we're talking about everything channel, distribution, OEM, VARs, VADs, the whole nine yards. And I want to talk about recent developments as far as market consolidation goes. What's your feel for what's going on here?
Yeah, I do think the market is consolidating, Mark. And not in total revenue or total margin, because you watch the stronger players, the bigger players, they are getting bigger. The numbers of players, though, I think is decreasing. We're seeing mergers and acquisitions go on. We're seeing companies just close up shop and get out of the business. Our transition totally. I'm not going to do hardware and software anymore. I'm only going to do services in the cloud. So my list of total companies or total vendors I'm playing with in this market is decreasing. So I think we're seeing the numbers decrease. Somebody asked me the other day about, you know, upcoming IDIQs or the next couple of years. The answer is a very small number. And you and I used to have 20 of those on our list, right? When we were doing business development, looking at what was coming out, you're not seeing that anymore. Much more business going through a smaller number of contracts. We're not going to have a lot of contracts out there. Smaller number of partners that have those contracts that can get into it. So I think overall, there's a market consolidation in terms of numbers, not necessarily revenue. The revenue keeps going up by, you know, single digit percentages every year.
Yeah. And I was talking to somebody over at FedSim. I think it was on the show recently with Chris Hamm and Tom Howder. Oasis had a task order of better than $1.5 billion. When we used to talk about task orders, we were talking a couple of hundred grand, you know,
it's
a few million. And when that first one hit off Oasis about 2 years ago, $974 million, and going, holy guacamole, Batman.
Well, and that's what challenges a small VAR, a small partner in this thing, not only credit-wise, but you see one deal like that can take down a $900,000 deal. That eliminates $900,000 deals, right? So
right.
That's, again, the consolidation on numbers of deals.
So. Yeah, so and to that end, I mean, you know, I'm just assuming you were part of the architecture of the Aero MX gig back in 16. I don't want confirmation on that. Nothing, you know, behind the kimono kind of thing.
I was there when it happened, that's
yeah.
For sure.
But I mean, you know, I wrote about that. It was one of the most popular things I wrote about that
mm-hmm.
year. The first one was straight news, and then people bugged me and asked for opinions, and then a few distributors said, well, why weren't you writing about us? Because you weren't part of the story. But that was a game changer. Why?
It was. Well, we talked earlier about, you know, an MX or Carisoft or DLT being software based, but they didn't have the hardware base, they didn't have the integration base. That brought together two factors kind of drove that acquisition by Aero of MX Group. MX needed capital to go expand into SLED. They had no hardware integration capabilities, so there was things they were missing from a distributor model. From the Aero side, you know, they were participating in the federal market. They were nowhere near as successful as what MX had been. So that became a good synergy between the two organizations to kind of get a full, you know, line card of everything we can offer: hardware, software, integration, you know, crazy financing, which you need in this world. So that's why that deal made sense. So again, you know, you want to get bigger, but you've got to get all the things on your line card, especially from a distribution, to operate. That's why the MX Aero, you know, integration made sense.
Tech Data and Avnet.
Same thing. So you've got a broadliner that's not playing heavily in federal. It didn't have a dedicated federal group, even though there are people at Tech Data before they bought Avnet that were involved. Avnet invested a number of years ago to stand up Avnet Government Solutions. They have an office in town, people in town that operate. Again, just made sense. Tech Data was looking for that. And you know that Tech Data had been shopping for a while to do something like that. So that made a lot of sense. Avnet, on the other hand, who's very strong in components, what they do in electronics, was not doing as well in kind of the product set that I played in. So they were trying to spin that off, which is what they finally did. So again, I think that was a great move for them. We'll see how that works out. That's a fairly new development.
But yeah, another one from 16, and it's a slightly different spin because it's not from the distribution. But Sirius of Dallas bought Force 3 over in
Crofton. Crofton, Maryland, right?
Yeah.
So that made sense to me for a couple of reasons. I knew Force 3, still know Force 3 fairly well. Big Cisco player,
Mike's real good.
Mike's excellent, gold D-VAR, but Mike was looking for, how does I expand the line card? How do I get investment money to go build some other things or buy more techies or engineers, whatever you have to do? Sirius on the other side, who's a monstrous commercial reseller, VAR solution provider, didn't have a presence in the federal space. I think they may have had one person in town. So for them, that allowed them to buy into the market and gave Force 3, gave Mike additional capital to get to other places where Sirius was.
Yeah.
Sirius has always been a traditionally big IBM player. Force 3 did no IBM. So you see, again, the synergies, at least on paper, make a lot of sense there.
Yeah, and that leads into my next topic here. Force 3 over the last couple of years has morphed itself from what I would call more of a traditional VAR model into a specialist firm. They are focusing on computer and network security at this point. And I think their migration is going pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I have no inside data. I mean, I speak to their sales group once a year, but I'm there for platitudes. Did I say that? No. Bring me back. No more platitudes. But specializing for VARs, I mean, it's something that I've pushed for some of the VARs in our market for a long time. Others really aren't there because they have no real strong single skill. But I wrote a piece for Federal Computer Week a few weeks back on CDM, Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation. And I predicated on a report from Bloomberg that did a study of 2012 to 2016 for the CDM market statement. During that time, there was $1 billion worth of activity, and there were a number of contracts being used and a number of vendors. So it was basically about 10 on each side there. The CDM BPA that was set up by FedSIM as a subset of the GSA schedule was number one or number two, depending on how you count, and SOUP was number two. But if you combine SOUP 4 and SOUP 5, then SOUP was number one. But, the interesting thing there was that a small company out of Tennessee, Sword and Shield, was the biggest seller of CDM. So do you counsel selected VARs to pursue that specialized area?
Absolutely. That S word is key to what I recommend. And specialization can be just in a particular contractual vehicle, particular agencies, which is what Sword and Shield did. I often look at technical specializations as well. If you're going to go play in cyber, get an area of cyber and go deep in it. Because when you're talking to the CIOs, the program managers downtown about it, you want to say, we are deep in this. We know this. I've got a number of engineers that can take you deep down, show you the pros and cons of what we're trying to do. You want to have that specialization. So, and then you want to stay. So I think, narrow and deep is the way to go, as opposed to trying to do everything. The argument you always get back from a VAR, it's like, but I've got a sales force that wants to cover 22 agencies. And, this person wants a different flavor storage system than the other one. It's like, you can't do that. You've got to go, somebody wants a storage system because they've got it installed, they want to expand that, and it's not the one you carry, go to the next opportunity rather than try to strike up a relationship with that other vendor or distributor that's got that. So I love specialization because that's where it works. That's when you're good, you're known in your agencies, you get additional opportunities.
Yeah, and you mentioned something there that resonates, and I could go into a number of stories about it, but agency specialization can be an area of subject matter expertise. if you know that agency inside out, you know the contractual vehicles that they use, you know when the money's going to happen, you know their priorities, you can make a lot of money focusing on a few agencies.
Well, even an agency you think is out of favor in the budget, I kind of mentioned that earlier, the agencies are so big. Somebody says, I want to sell to Army. I go, what part of the Army? You know, what part of Homeland Security do you want to sell to? What part of HHS do you want to sell to? They're monstrous places. You could live in there forever and just keep supporting that one agency IT-wise. So you know, I think that's definitely the way to go. So specialization has a number of flavors, all of which work.
Cool. Give me some final thoughts here.
Yeah.
Advice for the community.
I think consolidation is true. The channel is evolving. You and I have talked about a number of evolutions. We're in one at the moment as the cloud and all that takes over and where things are going. FedRAMP's a player. The cloud's a player. Services, a big player. You can't just sell the hardware without the software and services that go with it. So I just see the channel continue to evolve. It looks a lot different than when you and I came into it, and it's just welcome to this year's or this decade's evolution of the channel, right?
There you go. So final tidbit for me, you know, so if you see a player on Soup or CIOCS that's more of a pure product play and you got the service side of that equation, you have a reason to go sit down with them.
Absolutely.
So, Robert, always a pleasure, man. We got to get together more often.
Thanks, Mark. This was a joy. You and I could go on for hours about most of these topics.
We covered it pretty quickly,
but that was good.
We'll do it when you come down to lecture my class.
Okay.
There you go.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You bet. My pleasure. This is not my day job. I advise companies on all aspects of marketing to the government. If you are interested in having me look at your marketing program, drop me a line, markamtower@gmail.com. And thank you very much for listening to Amtower Off Center.
You've been listening to Amtower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.